from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs. This is the Locked On Chiefs podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Chiefs. I am Seth Kaiser with The Athletic. I am here by myself, which means it is mail time. Man, I want to sing the song so bad, but I'm not going to do it. We've got another mailbag. I'm excited. I hope you're as excited as I am. Let's roll through this. A fair warning before we get going. Because of the life that I lead, the ability for me to find a spot that's guaranteed consistent quiet today is not great. So there's a chance you hear shrieking of some sort. It might even be one of my children. So if that happens, we're just going to roll through it because that's how we do things here on the Locked On Chiefs mailbag, at least when it's me doing it. We've got lots of questions. As always, I appreciate you guys participating. Let's do this. We're going to start right away with Chiefs Focus asking, will the Chiefs offense continue from where they were last year, or will they take a step back? So here's the thing about what the Chiefs did last year. They were one of the best offenses in history in terms of scoring, in terms of efficiency, in terms of everything. They were an upper tier offense throughout history, which means, you know, every year you've got 32 offenses and you know, you're dealing with, you know, say 40 years if you want to go slightly more modern rather than, you know, going back all the way to like the 50s. So you've got tons of data telling us that it's really not possible to sustain that kind of production 2 years in a row. Of course, statistics don't necessarily mean certainty. For example, just because it's unlikely that you might get struck by lightning twice, there are people who've been struck by lightning five times. There are always exceptions. So there's no certainty that they have to regress. Statistically speaking, it's likely that they do somewhat, just because it's almost impossible to maintain that level of production consistently. So I would say the Chiefs are a bit of an unusual team in that with the level of quarterback play that they have and the head coach that they have, they are a bit of an anomaly, especially with the skill position players that they have, etc. So if any team were going to continue that level of production, it would be them. Kind of like when you think about the Showtime Rams and that kind of team, the Showtime Rams, that would be the Lakers. The greatest show on turf, Rams, they were able to sustain it for several years. So we'll see if the Chiefs can. It wouldn't surprise me given how talented they are. And again, you cannot underestimate an offense coached by Andy Reid and quarterbacked by Patrick Mahomes. He is easily the best quarterback Andy Reid has ever had. Josh Briscoe asks, who could I beat up? So, if you listen to last week's mailbag, we had a wonderful question about the esteemed Mr. Briscoe. If I could pick one and then fight the other two, you know, with Josh, Ryan, and Chris, who would I pick? And I picked Ryan. I explained my reasoning. And Josh was very offended. Well, not actually offended, but kind of. He was offended in that lovely way that Josh gets offended, which is always very fun. And so it actually led to a segment on Almost Entirely Sports where we talked about how he thinks he could beat up Chris. And I kind of explained that I've met both Chris and Ryan. They are both big dudes. So Josh, when you're listening to this, I think there are plenty of people you could beat up. You're bigger than I am. Now, I mean, you know, could you beat up me? Well, no. But that's because you're young and charming and handsome and no one has ever wanted to fight you because of those wonderful qualities. And so, Josh, you could beat up all kinds of people, I bet. Just not, you know, me or Ryan or Chris. That's all. All right. Anyway, moving on to one more non-football question. Mark Bo-Richter. And yes, that is the Mark Bo-Richter, who is just an aces guy. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you definitely should. He asks, I would like to know how the fishing was for the opener last weekend in the Park Rapids area. Mark vacations occasionally in the area where I live, and he is taunting me lately with the fact that I haven't gone fishing yet. Mark, I will get there. I promise. I just haven't. I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we're going to get to football questions because, goodness, you guys are killing me today. Brandon asks, would you say in his first year starting the NFL, Mahomes mastered the hard count? What new skill do you think he adds this year? Basically, just talk about Mahomes because it makes me happy. You know what, Brandon? I will, because talking about Mahomes makes me happy, too. I don't know if Mahomes mastered the hard count, but he definitely did a really good job with it. There are certain quarterbacks that do a great job drawing guys off sides. Aaron Rodgers is one of them. He's been kind of the gold standard of it for years. And Mahomes did a great job with it last year. We saw a lot more jumps. I am curious if there's some kind of relationship between the ability of the quarterback or the team being spooked of the quarterback and how easily he can draw people off sides. I think you've got pass rushers that are a little more twitchy, a little more nerve-wracked, a little more ready to roll because they know that guys like Mahomes and Rodgers are so difficult to bring down. So maybe that makes it easier. Maybe they just utilize it more. I have no idea, but he definitely did a great job with it. As far as the new skill I think he had this year, I think this year we're going to see even more audibles and control at the line of scrimmage from Mahomes. I think every year you're going to see more and more of that because he is, from everything we've seen, he's a student of the game. He loves, people, all these cliche, he loves the mental side, student of the game, gym rat, blah, 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 blah. With him, those things seem to be true. So I think the amount of control he had at the line of scrimmage last year was surprising for a first-year starter, but I think you are going to see him come close to mastering it this year, which would be a huge deal because if there was any way place that he needed to take a step forward, it's in his adjustments to what defenses show pre-snap. Daddy fix it. if you're handy and you can fix things, good for you, if that's what that means. I am not Mr. Fix-It. He asks, how much difference will Matt House have in the linebackers and Brendan Daly on the defensive line have this year? Percentage of how much? Thanks, Seth. Keep rocking, man. I will keep rocking. Percentage? It'll be 38% better there. it's tough to say specifically. I really like House and I really like Daly. I think both of those were exceptional hires. House, he was considered a star. Probably, a future DC and all that kind of stuff. And Daly is considered that as well. And so I love that they are trying to fill up their roster with those kind of stars. So I think it's going to make a difference. I don't know how much of one. It'll be impossible to say, but I love the fact that House is the linebackers guy, and I think they've added, especially with adding Darren Lee, which, it was a little too late for the mailbag. For me to talk too much about Darren Lee. I don't think any of you asked about it because of the timing of everything here. So let me just say that I'm looking at Darren Lee's film right now. I'll be writing about him on The Athletic soon here. So keep an eye out for that. I like a lot what he has to bring. He looks like a starting caliber linebacker to me. And he looks like a speedy guy who definitely is going to provide some really fierce competition for the weak outside linebacker. And so I'm very surprised they were able to get him for such a cheap price. Anyway, I think Daly and House will have a positive impact. I think the gamesmanship up front, the stunts, the twists, that kind of stuff, I think Daly does a good job coaching that up. And I think that can make a huge difference in the pass rush. And it's kind of funny, Derek Neeson, he asked the same thing. How much more dynamic, which is a little bit of a different question, will our front line be with Daly as the coach this year? And I think, again, it's a similar thing. When you've got someone who does a little bit better job teaching maybe some of the more nuanced things in terms of stunts and twists, that's something that you can get pressure with without requiring guys to win on their own. And that's such a huge deal. Not that the Chiefs don't have guys who can win on their own. They certainly do. But when you add the idea of twists and stunts, what that does often when those work and when they're done well is they're very quick pressure. And quick pressure is the name of the game. That is the most devastating thing you can do to an offense. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to keep rolling on through here.
Hope you guys are enjoying today's show. We want to let you know that we're going to be with you every day of the week, all off season long, just like we are during the football season. So make sure you're subscribed. Send your questions to Seth at Real Minnesota Chiefs Fan on Twitter and check out Ryan's live Q&A sessions Monday nights on the RGR Football Channel on YouTube.
All right, Steve Acton asks, could it be the Chiefs aren't going after a big-name cornerback because Spags is great at developing defensive backs? He's had a lot of great cornerbacks to work with in the past. Or did he take average corners, and did he have them play well? His reputation may be a defensive back whisperer, but what does the tape say? The tape, it's impossible to break down that kind of thing. it's tough to say whether, you know, it's a chicken or egg thing. So I don't know why the Chiefs have not been super aggressive. Brett Veach said that they wanted to take a corner earlier in the draft, but the timing never worked out. And when you look at, you know, they didn't have the first round pick, and you looked at where like Murphy and Williams and some of those guys went, it kind of adds up. They would have been reaching in the second round with most of the corners that were left. So I can kind of understand that. I don't think they're done. I still think they've got one more, but I'm assuming someone will be asking me about that. So I'll roll into that there. Keith McLean, my favorite, one of my favorite, not my very favorite, sorry, Keith, but one of my very favorite people on here. He asks, starting with when you became a Chiefs fan, what is your all-time roster? Quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, running back, flex, which is wide receiver, tight end, running back, and fullback. You guys will have to excuse the yawn and the tone of my voice. I had Lucas keep me up until about 2 in the morning, which is very on brand for me. And so I'm perfectly comfortable keeping yawns in there because we are a professional podcast here. So since I became a Chiefs fan, my all-time roster quarterback is obviously Mahomes. Wide receiver, if we're talking strictly on the field stuff, Tyreek Hill is going to be one of them. And I think the other one would probably be, oh man, would it be peak Dwayne Bowe, fast Eddie, or peak Jeremy Maclin? I think if I'm pairing them with Tyreek Hill, I'm going to go with peak Dwayne Bowe because he was just, it's easy because if things ended so badly with him, it's easy to forget. He was a beast after the catch. I mean, just impossible to bring down. And so I would keep him as a compliment to Hill. Tight end, as much as I love Travis Kelce, that's got to go to Tony Gonzalez. It's closer than you'd think because I think Kelce's peak is close to as high as Tony G's, if not as high. Running back, Jamal Charles, that's easy. As my flex, since we're doing wide receiver, tight end, running back, rather than adding another wide receiver, I'm adding Travis Kelce. Oh, can you imagine that offense? I mean, Hill, Bowe, and then you've got Kelce and Gonzalez and Charles. Oh, fullback, as much as I love Anthony Sherman, I gotta go with Tony Richardson, and I can almost guarantee you that if someone asked Anthony Sherman about that, he would not take it personally that someone took T. Rich over him. The greatest blocking fullback I've ever seen. B.R. Heckman asks, will upgraded safety play make our current cornerbacks good enough for a Super Bowl run? I don't know, but it is important to note that safety is as integral a part of coverage as corner. And if you have excellent safety play, it allows you to do certain things. So here's an example, and obviously this is the most high-end example. The Seattle Seahawks got away with running pretty simple cover three stuff for years, and they were able to have their corners, rather than playing a little more off, like you usually do with cover three, because, you know, they don't want to get burned deep. They were able to press right at the line of scrimmage. And the reason they could do that, now, for one, they had good corners, make no mistake. But also because Earl Thomas had such incredible range, they weren't worried about getting beat intermediate or deep because he could cover those areas, and quarterbacks were afraid to test those windows. That's something you can do with exceptional safety play. It closes the windows. It gives a little more leeway. It allows you to do a little bit more with your corners if you're confident that your safeties can cover on the back end and make up for mistakes, prevent big plays. And I think Tyrann Mathieu and Juan Thornhill might be a really good combination to make sure that happens. Yes, they're absolutely good enough to make a Super Bowl run. We'll just have to see. I wrote about on The Athletic, you know, in terms of whether or not the defensive really has upgraded. And I'm of the opinion, if you really break it down, kind of position group by position group, they have improved. And that's an encouraging thing. Josh Webb asks, a random hypothetical scenario, you're Brett Veach. If the Chargers called an offer to trade their entire roster except Philip Rivers in exchange for your entire roster except Patrick Mahomes, would you take the Chiefs' current roster with Mahomes or the Chargers' current roster with Mahomes? I think when I look at that defense that they have up and down, especially, I think the Chiefs have the superior offensive line. Obviously, Kelce's way better than their tight end situation. Although if Hunter Henry stays healthy, he's at least a solid tight end. But they've got good receivers. They've got good running backs. I would have to take the Chargers roster overall, mostly because I've got more confidence in their defense. We'll see if I feel that way at the end of this year. Randy Huff Jr., do you think there's any truth to the Patrick Peterson rumors that were flying around this week? Thanks. Keep up the great work and go Chiefs. Go Chiefs, Randy. I don't know if I would view them as actual rumors. Here's the deal. Have I continually been pushing the Patrick Peterson stuff? Yes. Yes, I have. Does that mean that I've heard anything? No. No, I haven't. I've heard whispers here and there, but who knows? You know, Briscoe would call them rumblings. I have no idea if there's actually anything to them. It's just it could be true. It could not be true. It just makes so much sense from everything that I see and believe. I think the Chiefs have upgraded their defense at every level this offseason. With the trade for Darren Lee and acquiring Damian Wilson, who isn't a world beater, but he's at least an okay player, they upgraded their linebacker spot. I think they've upgraded along the front when you take all the moves into account, which is incredible considering they lost Houston and Ford. The fact that they even got a tiny upgrade there blows my mind. They upgraded massively at the safety position. Cornerback is the one area where it just depends on your feelings on Bashaud Breeland and Charvarius Ward. Now, Ward was here last year, but it depends on whether you think Breeland's an upgrade on Steven Nelson. But even then, you know, how much of an upgrade is it really? That's one area where if they were able to massively upgrade that area, you could make an argument that they've upgraded the defense in a huge way. And when you've got a Super Bowl window open, well, it makes sense to be aggressive like that. So that's one reason why I continually push that, just because it makes so much sense. So I don't know if there's any truth to it. I just know if I were Brett Veach, I would be burning up the phone lines to acquire a good, consistent cornerback. And I'll talk about why Patrick Peterson's the name that keeps coming up in a minute, because I believe someone asked me about that. Let's take a look here. Isaac Lieberman asks, who on the Chiefs would have the most successful career as a rapper? This might sound weird considering his voice, but is there anything Patrick Mahomes doesn't do well? Like anything? So it's hard not to believe that he wouldn't have a successful career as a, and you could insert the blank here. It could be anything. It could be, you know, a Wall Street broker, whatever. I feel like he can do anything. He's just one of those ridiculously gifted people. As far as anyone else, I mean, I don't know. Personally, I think that pro athletes need to stop trying to be rappers. Because usually, and not that, you know, the 34-year-old evangelical pastor from Minnesota is the authority on rap. Because if I am, that's just sad. But everything I've ever heard from players has generally been not amazing. I had a few of you, Adam Zook, Jack Small, a few other people ask about Darren Lee. Like I said, I'm going to review his film. I want to take a look at what he did on a snap-by-snap basis rather than just looking at kind of his highlights, to where it's important to see what he did on a consistent basis, not just what he can do. Because I just think you're asking for trouble if you only look at what a player can do at their best. So I'm going to be careful about that, but I will take a look at that. We're going to take another break, then we're going to close out strong here.
Now you can get Locked On Chiefs on the brand new podcasting app, Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all the normal places. We're here for you 5 days a week, all off season long, with guests, analysis, film review, athleticism, my draft guide, and all kinds of stuff from The Athletic and Chiefs Digest. Make sure you get subscribed today, and you can do it over on the Himalaya podcasting app.
All right. To be or not to be, as we close out here. Oh, my goodness. I almost forgot to keep up a tradition here. Excuse me while I get myself a drink of water. Ah, man, that's good stuff. You know, I like that we have traditions together. This is nice. It's nice. All right. To be or not to be, you know, that is the question. Ask Seth, I admire your ability to balance multiple careers and family, which inspires me on my trek towards building a career in medicine and public policy. I'm guessing your secret is you know what you want and go for it. My secret is that I don't sleep much, which is why I'm like yawning while I make a podcast. I would just say, you know, people ask me about balancing careers and family and that kind of stuff. I guess I would just say it's a matter of organization and prioritizing things. What's important? What are the things that really matter to you? And then you make sure that you divvy out time for it. I'm a big believer in creating a chart and planning out the hours of your day and then sticking to it as best you can, because that'll allow you to be most efficient. And then, yeah, you just go for it. You just do the best you can. But one thing I would say, you know what you want and go for it. My advice to anyone is, if you build your life around what you want only, you're going to end up unhappy. And we took a very serious turn in the Locked On Chiefs mailbag, but it's not really just about what you want. It's often about what's right and wrong and what's best. And oftentimes for an adult, what we want usually isn't what's best. Because what I want to do is go take a nap, to be perfectly honest. So that's my thing is, you know, don't always think about what you want, but think about what is best. All right. Graham Oldfather asks, I feel like the Darren Lee trade is a perfect example of how late first-round picks don't always pan out. Teams move on from him quickly. Does this reaffirm your feeling we should trade a first-round pick for an elite cornerback to shore up that room? Thanks, Seth. You're the best. Well, thanks, Graham. I appreciate you. You're the best. Yes, it's a good example of what can happen here, especially with late first-round picks. This idea that late first-round picks are somehow this gold mine. Look at the history. Look at draft history. Now, does that mean that, you know, just because the hit rate isn't that high, that they're worthless? Of course not. They're worth a great deal if you hit on them. But, you know, the whole bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. That's an expression for a reason. And I'm going to continue beating this drum. I might write an article about draft picks not being all they're cracked up to be, especially after you leave the top 10. And, you know, we'll get to that at some point. Oh, crud. Now I'm going to have to write about it. So I blame you for this, but thank you for saying the nice things about me. All right. Lucas Sylvester asks, do you think Hyde is on the 53-man roster? If you do, who else was with him as far as running back? Yes, I do. They gave him a pretty decent contract. Hyde can play, and I think we're forgetting that because, I mean, he's struggled with health, so we'll see what happens there. I think you're going to have Damian Williams, Carlos Hyde, and Darwin Thompson for sure. I think Darrell Williams makes it. I think James Williams makes it. I think they're going to use a lot of those guys in terms of special teams. Now, they usually have only had three active running backs, so it's going to be a tough, tough, crowded room. But hey, I prefer that. You remember my roller coaster theory? You must be this tall in order to get on the field. And I like that. I think Carlos Hyde is a good representation of that. Adam Zook asks, between the Broncos and Raiders, which one scares you just a tiny bit more this coming season? I guess the Broncos, just because there's a lot of unknown there. And Fangio, I think, has the potential to be a really, really good coach. So that's going to make a big difference because Gruden just doesn't scare me. Taylor Moss asks, who is one player in Chiefs history that you don't think would be good, who I didn't think would be good, that actually developed and contributed well to the team? Also, another player you thought would be good and actually turned out to be terrible. The second list is longer because I tend to be fairly optimistic. A guy that I didn't think would be good and then developed and contributed well to the team, Tom Bahali. I did not think that he would be particularly good. I thought he was kind of an overachiever, based on effort alone. And so I was surprised by that. D Ford kind of, but that was back and forth as well. A player who I thought would be good and turned out terrible. That's a longer list. I thought Glenn Dorsey was going to be a stud. They're really, that could be a very long list, honestly, guys I thought would be good. And of course, people that have been following since I worked for SB Nation, you know, the whole Cyrus Gray debacle. But anyway, Glenn Dorsey, that one really stung, honestly. Rod Mattingly asks, way too early, make a way early prediction of the free agent rookies that make the final roster. I can't even. Sorry, Rod. I don't know. It's impossible to say at this point. And probably not very many. You know, all the time, around this time every year, we convince ourselves that, you know, like eight of these guys might make the roster, and usually maybe one does, maybe two. Now they definitely put some extra effort into it. I wrote about that on The Athletic, that it seems like they're trying to make a concerted effort to use undrafted rookie free agency to kind of help make up for the fact that they traded away some picks. And so maybe they've got a chance for a few more, but it's just almost impossible to say how these guys will work out once you reach that point. Steve Soper asks, will Darwin Thompson end up as a rock Dante Hall? Well, he doesn't have Hall speed. So I don't know, but I just love the whole rocked up thing. He is a big dude. Make no mistake, for a little dude. You know, the whole rocked up thing. I mean, he's just shredded. You know, you've got the whole thing, you know, him squatting 500 pounds like it's nothing. It's just ridiculous how that guy is built. Chiefs Overlord asks, who will start at left guard? Cam Irving. I would be stunned if it weren't him. I think he is well respected on the team. When I used to talk to Mitch Morse about the various offensive linemen, and I mean, they all just love Cam. He's an incredible athlete. They love his attitude, and he's picked things up very quickly in Kansas City. The Curl Scout says, did you see Spot Track tweet saying Jalen Ramsey is up for trade? Well, I think that was just saying like people that potentially could be up for trade. So I think it was more speculation than rumor mongering. I did see that, and I also had someone else ask later on whether I would have Patrick Peterson or Jalen Ramsey, and why. I personally would prefer Peterson. The reason for that is that Peterson has been consistently very, very good for years, whereas Jalen Ramsey last year had a bit of a down year, which to me, with cornerback, it's very difficult because corner is a position that fluctuates a ton from year to year, and there are very few guys that are consistently very good. Like Chris Harris Jr., consistently every year, very, very good. Aqib Talib, consistently every year, very, very good. Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis at his peak, Champ Bailey. I keep naming former Broncos. You can see why they've had good defenses. It's tough to be very, very good year in and year out. And Ramsey was decent last year, but he wasn't as good, which makes me worry more about sustainability. That said, he's a stud, and I would love either of them on the Chiefs. I would favor Peterson just a little bit, partly because of Matthew's familiarity with him, the secondary coach's familiarity with him, just a few things like that. Alex Acton asks, will the Chiefs offense finish in the top five if Hill isn't on the team? I keep telling people I think they will. They were that good last year. By the way, the last name is pronounced, oh, sorry, Aiton. Aiton. Well, see, I should have looked. I'm sorry to save you the headache. I love how it's becoming part of my brand that I can't pronounce people's last names. All right, Alex Acton asks that. I think you're right. Yes, they'll very likely, in my opinion, finish in the top five, whether or not Tyreek Hill's on the roster. The idea that a wide receiver drops a team that significantly is silly to me, especially a team with a franchise quarterback. This isn't, you know, the Giants losing Odell. It's very different because Patrick Mahomes ain't Eli Manning. This is very different things. And I mean, Andy Reid is a different type of animal. Andy Reid with Patrick Mahomes, they are probably going to be a top five offense almost every year, regardless of what else is around them, unless they have a complete tire fire around them, you know, made up of awful, awful players. Buck Rogers asked, do the Chiefs make one last big move? I think they do. I really do, guys. I'm telling you, and this is not based on any inside information whatsoever, I think they are all in for the next 3 years. Because I think this year you've got the last year of Mahomes' rookie deal, and then they're going to sign him to a massive contract, but the first couple years of that contract are going to be a little bit lower because that's the way they structure these things. And so you've really got, in my opinion, about a three-year window here, and I think they are all in on that three-year window, and I think that's where you go out and you get a Peterson, you get a Ramsey, you get someone, and you sign them to a contract that, you know, says 5 years in theory, but in practice it's actually a three-year deal, just like what they did with Frank Clark. Tyrann Mathieu's deal is a three-year deal. These things, I can see it. I can see it happening, and this is the time to strike. This is the time to go for it. Also, in the meantime, make sure you extend Chris Jones's contract, too. Donnie Couch, we got time for just a few more here, asks, if K-Pass and Breland both step up and have at least 9.5 sacks and one interception each, wow, 9.5 sacks each for K-Pass and Breland Speaks? How much will that helped the defense if Alex Okafor, Chris Jones, and Frank Clark all played high levels? I got to tell you, if Breland Speaks and Tano Passanio have 9.5 sacks each, and Okafor, Jones, and Clark play at high levels, you are going to see the Chiefs jump to an upper-tier defense. I would be stunned if those two contributed this next season at that level or even close to it. And could you see Cody Thompson making the roster? Yeah, sure. There's a lot of opportunity for receivers on the Chiefs roster, and if you can show a rapport with Mahomes, you're going to stick around. Which undrafted free agent do you, or I'm sorry, JV asks, which undrafted free agent do you think you'll be rooting for most in the preseason? Custis, Gary Johnson for me. I'm really rooting for Gary Johnson. I would love to see him succeed. I think, Custis is a good one as well. Or Custis, sorry. Cody Thompson's a great one. I really would love to see Mark Field succeed just because it's such a position of need. So that's the one I'm really rooting for. We got time for one more, I think. Sorry for those of you that I'm going to miss. Blake Terrence asks, maybe you already addressed this, but do you think the Chiefs are pushing back, calling off plans to give Chris Jones a long-term deal? Ask him because it hasn't happened yet, and of the Clark deal and the Mahomes deal coming next offseason, don't see why they couldn't make it work. You're absolutely right. If you look at the numbers, they can easily make it work. I mean, there's plenty of room for a Chris Jones deal with the Mahomes deal coming. Tons of room for that and an extra player. So I don't know. I just think that you just remember Aaron Donald last offseason. These things take time. So I wouldn't sweat it too much. Jones is the type of player you build around. All right. That's the time we have. As always, I appreciate you guys participating in this. I appreciate you guys putting up with my quirky yawning and my quirky water drinking and my quirky takes on football. As always, this is one of my favorite parts of this job. I appreciate you guys listening. Make sure to check out the stuff that I'm writing on The Athletic. A lot of you have come and joined. I hope to see more of you around. It's so much fun. I appreciate you guys willing to read. Check out what Ryan and Chris have going on at RGR Football and at Chiefs Digest, respectively. They are doing great work and they are just great guys to boot. I hope you guys have a great week, and just, of course you will, because it is a great week to be a Chiefs fan. Take care, guys.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes or Google Play. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Chiefs. Check out my work at RGR Football on YouTube, Chris's work on LockedOnChiefs.com, and all of Seth's film analysis at TheAthletic.com. Thanks for listening.